Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. June 19th, known as Juneteenth, is now a new federal holiday to commemorate the end of slavery. We'll have reactions from some local leaders on today's show. Then on our Capitol Report, we'll have the latest actions by our local congressional members, including Sarah Jacobs' appointment to a committee on economic disparity and fairness, as well as Daryl Issa's efforts to boost staffing for passport offices to meet a surge in travel demands post-COVID. CAL FIRE and the sheriff have a warning against operating drones near wildfires, and county supervisors have approved waiving some criminal fees starting in July. On Green Scene, hear about new shade structures coming to some county parks. And at Santee Lakes, celebrating its 60th anniversary, a new deck and restaurant are providing gathering places for the community. Today, we'll share an immigrant success story about a man who finally attained degrees from Grossmont College after years of efforts and setbacks to overcome. What's harder than running a restaurant during the pandemic? Today, we'll tell you about IQ Barbecue in La Mesa, where the owners had to delay their opening for nearly a year amid a global pandemic and civil unrest, and share the secret to this minority-owned business's success. Saddles and Service has a golf tournament coming up to help veterans, military members, and first responders, and we'll have details on how you can help. On the second half of our show today, on Bookshelf, Raina Menashe will be interviewing Catherine Cloward, the author of a new book on Father Joe Carroll, San Diego's tireless homeless advocate known as the Hustler Priest. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Federal workers had a day off on Friday, June 19th to commemorate the newest federal holiday. President Joe Biden signed into law a bill making June 19th known as Juneteenth a federal holiday. The measure was passed by the Senate on unanimous consent and approved by the House of Representatives by a 415-14 vote. All San Diego members of Congress voted in favor of the bill, including Republican Daryl Issa, as well as Democrats Susan Davis, Mark Levin, Scott Peters, and Juan Vargas. Juneteenth commemorates the arrival of Union troops in Galveston, Texas, after the Civil War ended on June 19, 1867, marking the official end of slavery in the United States more than 2 years after President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation freeing slaves. During the bill signing ceremony, President Biden stated, "Great nations don't ignore the most painful moments. They don't ignore those moments in the past, they embrace them." The signing was held in the White House before a crowd that included lawmakers and 94-year-old Opal Lee, who campaigned to make the day a national holiday. Biden voiced concerns over efforts by some states to restrict voting rights and called Juneteenth a date to commemorate the past, but also to call for action to prevent voter suppression and assure racial equity. Juneteenth was already a holiday in 47 states and the District of Columbia before becoming a federal holiday. In San Diego, Reverend Shane Harris, a national civil rights leader and founder of the People's Association of People's Justice in San Diego, calls the bill signing historic but added, quote, "It is only a holiday and means nothing if the follow-up is not passing real legislative reforms that impact equity in Black communities across America." Harris wants Senate to pass George Floyd Justice and Policing Act and John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and he adds, "My hope is that our curriculum in schools start to reflect Juneteenth's history for generations to come, so our kids know the truth of when African American slaves were actually freed." San Diego Lawyers Club President Yahaira Aristi also praises the holiday declaration as an important recognition of a milestone in American history, the end of hundreds of years of tragedy and travesty of slavery. Aristi adds that, as president of an organization dedicated to equality, quote, "I hope Juneteenth will be a day of both celebration and reflection for all. Let us take the opportunity to learn more about our history and to commit to continuing struggle to ensure equality for all Americans," Aristi concludes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Brianna Gomez.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Alexa Oslowski with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, whose district includes parts of San Diego and East County, has been named to the new House Select Committee on Economic Disparity and Fairness in Growth. The committee is based on an FDR panel during the Great Depression. The 53rd District Representative is the sole Democratic freshman to serve on the Select Committee, which will focus on the widening wealth and income disparity in the United States. Jacobs says she is honored and humbled by the appointment, adding, quote, "As we prioritize an equitable recovery from this pandemic, I'm especially grateful to be focusing on the future of work, on the care economy and emerging technology, and on international development and global poverty." The committee is modeled after the temporary National Economic Committee established by President Franklin Roosevelt and Congress in the 1930s. The panel will study and recommend policies to, quote, "make our economy work for everyone, ensuring that no one is left out or left behind as the economy grows," Jacobs' office said. Washington Post columnist David Ignatius noted the committee would be chaired by moderate Democratic Rep. Jim Himes of Connecticut. Ignatius says the idea is to bring together representatives from all sides. Rust Belt districts harmed by plant shutdowns, urban districts ravaged by racial injustice, rural districts where farmers are suffering from drought, and districts across the country where young people are struggling with debt, low-wage jobs, and an uncertain future. Over the next 18 months, the committee plans to hold hearings and issue a report. The committee will look at fairness impacts of everything, from the tax code and globalization to regulations and quasi-monopolies such as Google and Amazon. Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who appointed Jacobs to the committee, says, quote, "The whole point is to make sure that people are listened to. We have a patriotic obligation to find common ground." She also adds, quote, "We must end the health, economic, and environmental injustice that affects people's lives, and it must be done soon. With this committee, we can build back better in a way that ensures liberty, prosperity, and opportunity for all." In selecting Jacobs, Pelosi noted the 32-year-old member will be, quote, "focusing on the future of work with both a family and global perspective, in addition to her wider work on the committee." Prior to serving in Congress, Jacobs worked at the State Department and the United Nations, also founding a nonprofit aimed at ending child poverty in San Diego. She currently serves as a member of the House Armed Services Committee and the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, and in Congress has focused on child care and poverty, the future of work, and a new American foreign policy. Jacobs says, quote, "To have millions of children experiencing poverty, vast disparities in wealth, and so many who can't survive in our current economy is both a moral and a policy failure." She says everyone has an obligation to push for a fairer and more just America, especially, quote, "those of us who have benefited from the system as it is."
In a letter to Secretary of State Antony Blinken, Congressman Daryl Issa, a San Diego Republican, is calling on the Biden administration to surge resources to meet increasingly high citizen passport demand. According to Issa, this has created a backlog of requests that continues to grow and impact travel plans for Americans across the country. In a press statement, Issa says, quote, "Thankfully, Americans are on the move again, and the resumption of travel is essential to our national economic rebound. But State Department resources have not been restored to pre-COVID capacity, so passport office staffing levels remain restricted, with limited appointments," he said. Congressman Issa criticized the government's response to the growing backlog of passport requests, adding, quote, "Our fellow citizens have every right to expect their government to meet this need. That's why I'm calling on the State Department to surge resources by resuming full staffing, adding extra hours of service and operations to assist customers and provide the necessary support and resources to relieve overburdened staff and clear the backlog of passport requests." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
As we enter our summer fire season, the San Diego County Sheriff's Department and CAL FIRE remind the public that it is against the law to fly a drone near or over a wildfire. Firefighting aircraft could be grounded, disrupting critical fire operations when time is of the essence. Flying a drone over or near a wildfire is dangerous and can cost lives. Even the media is asked to avoid flying drones or helicopters near wildfires. During a wildfire, crews rely heavily on helicopters, planes, and other large aircraft to deliver gallons of water or fire retardant to a burn site. Aircraft fly very low and come in quickly. Air crews maintain radio communication with each other to coordinate efforts and fly safely. Pilots navigate smoky, windy, turbulent conditions with poor visibility while focusing their efforts on extinguishing the flames. Drones and firefighting aircraft fly in the same airspace, about 200 feet above the ground. Drones are hard to spot, and there is no way to communicate with their pilots. Drones can be sucked into the rotors of a helicopter, get into an engine of an aircraft, or strike the propeller of a helitaker, potentially causing a deadly crash. When a drone shows up in a restricted airspace, all aircraft responding to the fire operation are required to land until the airspace is clear to avoid a mid-air collision. That valuable time could be used to slow down and suppress the spread of a wildfire. Delaying airborne response poses a threat to firefighters on the ground, residents' property, and nearby communities. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, implements a temporary flight restriction around wildfires to protect firefighting aircraft. It is also against state law in California to interfere with the activities of first responders during an emergency. Any drone pilot found guilty of recklessly interfering with firefighting or other emergency response operations could face up to a year in prison and face fines up to $20,000 per violation. The FAA can also suspend or revoke the drone pilot's license. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
The San Diego County Board of Supervisors voted on June 8th to amend the county's administrative code to implement state legislation that eliminates the assessment and collection of criminal fees before the law's effective start date on July 1st. Also known as the Family Over Fees Act, State Assembly Bill 1869 was signed into law last year by Governor Gavin Newsom and made the state the first in the nation to repeal most criminal administrative fees and forgive associated debt. County agencies directly impacted by the change include the Public Defender, Probation Department, and Sheriff's Department. County Public Defender Randy Mize says, "These fees have always been a burden for low-income individuals and families. Eliminating these criminal justice fees will help to maintain the stability of financial resources for some of our most vulnerable residents," he adds. According to research prepared by the Debt-Free Justice Coalition and presented to the state legislature, these fees disproportionately impact low-income individuals and persons of color who are overrepresented in the criminal justice system. According to Mize, the collection rate for these fees has historically been low because people in the justice system already face major challenges in finding employment and even housing. He says, "Handing someone a bill for hundreds, even thousands of dollars that will never be collected makes no sense." The county's probation department will also see major changes under AB 1869, since fees that will be eliminated include the adult probation investigation fee, the supervision fee, and the GPS tracking fee. Cesar Escudo, the county's interim chief probation officer, says eliminating criminal fees like these will allow those on probation to redirect their limited financial resources to critical needs like food, shelter, education, and even health insurance for both themselves and their family members. Escudo also said the new law's provision for giving existing debt is just as important as the fee elimination and will help a large number of county residents. He explains, "In the past, failure to pay these fees resulted in severe consequences, such as driver's license suspensions and negative financial information forwarded to credit reporting agencies," said Escudo. Eliminating and forgiving fees will cost the county an estimated $3.6 million in lost revenue and increased costs. However, the state legislature has allocated $65 million to be distributed statewide to counties to backfill lost revenues for the next four fiscal years. The method of distributing these statewide funds has not been determined, and the amount available to San Diego County is not known at this time. People who are impacted by the fee waivers and debt forgiveness will be contacted, and the county will also publish notices on its website before July 1st when the new law takes effect. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. This is Jonathan Getz.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Angela Kurish with a Green Scene Report. Staying fit, enjoying nature, and just playing around will soon be cooler and more fun at 18 county parks after the Board of Supervisors approved installing new sunshade structures and playground equipment. County supervisors voted unanimously to spend $1.4 million to install 11 fabric shade sail structures at 10 county parks to keep visitors cooler and prolong the life of playground equipment, and to spend roughly $3.6 million to install 12 new or replacement playgrounds at 10 parks. Two parks in El Cajon, Flint Springs County Park and Steel Canyon County Park, will get both sunshade structures and playground equipment. County Parks officials anticipate construction on the new amenities to begin this summer and be ready to use this fall. The 18 parks are located in 9 communities: Chula Vista, Del Mar, El Cajon, Julian, Lakeside, Pine Valley, Ramona, San Diego, and Spring Valley, and range in size from the 1/2-acre neighborhood Hillsdale County Park in El Cajon to the 929-acre William Hise County Park in Julian. San Diego's County Parks and Recreation Department operates 150 facilities, mostly in the unincorporated county, including 56,000 acres of parkland and more than 380 miles of trails, as well as lakes, campgrounds, historical sites, and ecological preserves. County Parks also operates more than 100 playground facilities at parks open year-round to promote health and wellness. Many of those playground facilities are in communities that can get hot in the summer, over 100 degrees. New shade structures over those play areas will make it easier to beat the heat and enjoy the parks. The shade sails will also extend the lifespan of play equipment, protecting it from sun damage. The new playground equipment will replace existing playgrounds or portions of existing playgrounds. All new playgrounds will meet or exceed the requirements of the Americans with Disabilities Act to be accessible to all people.
Santee Lakes is celebrating its 60th anniversary in style with the addition of a new observation deck on Lake 4, adjacent to the new Tin Fin Restaurant. Padre Dam Municipal Water District, which owns and operates the lakes, hosted a grand opening celebration on June 17th. The occasion was cause for joy for another reason. It was one of the first public events in Santee where face masks were not required. After over a year of quarantine, people in attendance were smiling, laughing, and exchanging hugs. Now the new 4,000-square-foot Lakeview deck provides a place to meet friends outside or just kick back and relax in a beautiful outdoor setting. Santee Lakes provides more than recreation. The lakes are also nationally recognized for its innovative uses built around a wastewater treatment facility. The park was the vision of its first general manager, Ray Stoyer. In the late 1950s, rather than shell out a king's ransom to San Diego to treat Santee's sewage, Stoyer developed a plan to treat wastewater and purify it for use in irrigation. Once that project, which attracted worldwide attention, was done, he wanted to make the lakes a place where local residents could come to enjoy nature. When the county said no, Stoyer wouldn't give up and rallied the community to back his idea. The county eventually came around to granting the necessary permits, and on June 17, 1961, Santee Lakes Recreation Park was open to the public. Today, Santee Lakes' 190 acres offers 300 campsites, 10 floating cabins, hundreds of RV parking spaces, and ample opportunities for fishing, boating, pedal boat rides, biking, walking, bird watching, and more. There's even a splash park for kids, a rock climbing wall, and pavilions for parties. Laura Koval, Padre Dam's Director of Parks and Recreation, said the new deck is the jewel of the park. Despite the pandemic, the work was completed on time and on budget at a cost of $9 million, Koval said. She thanked her staff and visitors, who numbered about 750,000 a year before the pandemic. Once word gets out about the new deck and the rest of the improvements on Lake 4, attendance is likely to come roaring back. Santee Lakes also has some festive events coming up, including night fishing, a 4th of July parade, and a water lantern festival at Summer's End. You can learn more at SanteeLakes.com. Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is Jonathan Getz.
For Cesar Mazzari, June 9th, 2021 was a milestone. He celebrated his 60th birthday on the same day he obtained his diploma during Grossmont College's 60th commencement ceremony. His persistence to achieve his dream is also an American immigrant success story. Mazzari says his daughter pointed out, "Dad, you are as old as Grossmont College." he earned associate degrees in both business administration and economics at the community college in El Cajon, as well as a certificate of achievement in university studies, graduating with a 3.6 grade point average. He first came to Grossmont College 41 years ago, right after graduating from high school in Jordan. He lived with his brother, who was attending San Diego State University. But his brother returned to his home country after earning his bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. Alone and struggling academically, Mazare lost his financial aid and ended up dropping out, working odd jobs to get by. In the 41 years it took him to finally obtain his degrees, he got married, became a U.S. citizen, had two children, got divorced, and raised his kids as a single dad and saw them through college. Next, he hopes to go to UC Santa Barbara and earn a bachelor's degree in economics and accounting. Despite having proficiency with numbers after working 35 years as a controller and accounting manager for several prominent San Diego businesses, including the historic Spreckles Building, Mazare says that without the academic credentials, he can only advance so far in his career. When the recession hit in 2008, the accounting firm where Mazare worked as a controller lost about half of its clients, and he found himself replaced by a low-paid bookkeeper. With a son attending UC Santa Cruz and a daughter at UC San Diego, he took on in-home bookkeeping to scrape by and pay expenses. He recalls, "By the time I finished paying for their college, I had nothing left. I lost everything, my home, furniture, and all personal possessions," adding, "This was the hardest time in my life." So at the end of 2019, he decided to go back to school and get an accounting degree to become certified. But at first, he was denied financial aid, making his dream seem impossible to attain. Mazare says he cried at the news. Fortunately, a financial aid supervisor encouraged him to file an appeal. He went to a library and spent hours typing up a 5-page appeal, which fortunately was approved. His youthful time at Grossmont College back in his late teens proved yet another obstacle. "When I first joined Grossmont, I found out that my GPA from the early 80s was 1.65, and I was on probation," he recalls. Fortunately, he finally graduated in June this year with an A average. When asked what advice he would give non-traditional students like himself, Mazare says that the only obstacles are those created in one's mind. He recalls a friend pointing out to him that at age 58, he'd be 62 by the time he completes a 4-year degree. Mazare countered that if he didn't go to school, he'd still be 62 in 4 years, but without a degree. Mazare says he pointed out to his friend, "Not going to school will not stop the years from passing." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Angela Kurish.
What could be more challenging than starting up a new restaurant? How about investing in opening a restaurant only to have the COVID-19 pandemic shutdowns prevent you from opening your doors for nearly a year? And planning a Black-owned business in La Mesa in the midst of racial justice protests. Tyrone Hopkins and Naomi Preciado faced that situation right after they acquired a site in La Mesa on Broadway near the foot of Spring Street in February 2020. The business partners named their budding venture IQ Barbecue after their backgrounds as educators. Both worked at Horizon Christian Academy in San Diego until the school closed down. Tyrone was dean of students and boys basketball coach, leading the team to win a state championship. Naomi taught Spanish. But before they could fulfill their dream to open up their barbecue restaurant, the pandemic shut down restaurants statewide. Then a protest and riot led to the burning down of several La Mesa buildings, making the situation in La Mesa for businesses even more tumultuous than elsewhere, with weeks of businesses boarded up in anticipation of more civil unrest, though fortunately that did not occur. Since their restaurant hadn't yet opened and hadn't filed a tax return the year before, Tyrone and Naomi weren't even eligible for federal COVID-19 relief programs that most restaurants could apply for. They also couldn't qualify for a relief fund for La Mesa businesses impacted by the riot, since they hadn't yet opened their doors. Undaunted, they opened a catering business out of Naomi's home, accepting to-go orders. Tyrone would fire up the barbecue the day before to slow-cook meats Southern style, drawing on his Georgia roots. His mother was a chef in Atlanta, and his father taught him how to barbecue in their backyard starting when he was only 3 years old, he says. The secret to his savory sauce? Brown sugar and vinegar, he says. Naomi has also added to the pair's recipe for success. Raised in North Carolina, where her military father was stationed, she has also lived in Panama, where her mother is from. Naomi's forte is baking up delicious desserts such as lemon zest, pistachio cake, chocolate brownie, and strawberry cake. At first,
Business from local churches kept them above water. When they finally were able to open their new IQ Barbecue restaurant in January, Tyrone recalls, there were 150 people lined up waiting outside before we were even open. Some people waited for over an hour. In June, the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce hosted a ribbon cutting to welcome IQ Barbecue to the community. Chamber members savored a range of slow-cooked meats, barbecue beans, and mouth-watering desserts. Now, Tyrone says, things are going very well. The La Mesa community is amazing. His favorite menu item is the Southern Hospitality grilled cheese with brisket burnt ends. But there are also some Southwest and California twists, such as a burger of ground sirloin and pork sausage, topped with guacamole and served with a slice of lime. And every Saturday, they offer off-menu specials, such as fried chicken, tri-tip sliders, and blinky fry bread, a Panamanian dish. IQ Barbecue is open from Thursday through Saturday. So far, they've received rave reviews on Yelp. In addition to delicious barbecued foods and desserts to savor, you'll also be greeted by warmth and hospitality from the people there as well. You can feast your eyes on the menu at IQBBQSD.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz with a public service announcement. If you like golfing, you can get in the swing for a good cause on Friday, July 30th at Cottonwood Golf in El Cajon. The Saddles and Service Golf Tournament will raise funds to help local veterans, active duty military, and first responders receive mental health wellness and healing through equine-assisted activities at Saddles in Service, a nonprofit organization located in Alpine. The golf tournament will also include breakfast, lunch, a silent auction, and country western music star Amy Scruggs as master of ceremonies. Saddles and Service is also seeking sponsors for this very special event. For more information or to make a reservation, you can visit saddlesinservice.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm speaking with author Catherine Cloward about Father Joe Carroll's recently released memoir, Father Joe, Life Stories of a Hustler Priest. In this book, Father Joe shares his unique journey from a kid in Brooklyn to a beloved icon in San Diego and beyond. Catherine Cloward, who has known Father Joe her entire life, describes being asked by him to write his book as one of her greatest honors. Today we have Catherine. Welcome. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Hi, thanks, Raina. I'm happy to be here.
The initial interview is going to be with you and Father Joe. So let's begin with a little bit of information about why Father Joe couldn't make it.
Sure. Well, he wishes he could be on this interview today. You know, Father Joe loves sharing and talking with people, but he just had a surgery a few weeks ago and he's in recovery, home recovery right now. And the focus is on his health and getting better and healing. And so, you know, he joyfully loves anyone talking about the book. And so I'm grateful for the opportunity to talk with you about the books and, you know, on his behalf, the best as I can, as shared in Father Joe, Life Stories of a Hustler Priest.
And when he gets better, we'll have to bring him on again.
Oh gosh, he would love that.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go to the title of the book. If you could sum up for anyone who might not know him, if there is anyone, who Father Joe is and how he was first named the Hustler Priest.
Oh, yes. Father Joe, as you said in the intro, he is an icon in San Diego. And he is known. His name is on buildings all around San Diego, Father Joe's villages. We see his trucks. I was just driving the other day on the 163 here in San Diego, and I was driving behind a Father Joe's villages truck. So what this Father Joe Life Stories of a Hustler Priest shares is really a nice full spectrum vantage of a man named Joe Carroll, Father Joe Carroll. He's a Monsignor in the Catholic Church. And when he was assigned to take over what at the time is called St. Vincent de Paul Center, Bishop Maher at the time just selected Father Joe. He came into the office, said, okay, I've got a new assignment for you. And basically just told him he was going to be in charge of St. Vincent de Paul. They had this parking lot, empty lot in downtown, and they wanted a quote unquote homeless shelter to be built on there. And Father Joe was like, no, I'm a parish priest, and you'll read all about this in the book. And he said, why me? Why do you want me to do this? And Bishop Maher said, well, because I asked, you know, a few other people, and everyone said you were the biggest wheeler dealer hustler in San Diego. So that's kind of like where it started. And we talk about hustler, really, it's this entrepreneurial spirit, his Father Joe, and you'll read that throughout the book. And you know, as he shared with me in the interviewing process of this entire book, you know, that mindset, that entrepreneurial mindset to go, if there's a will to make money, there's a way. And so he translates that over into all the work that he's done to help San Diegans. And it's evident in how wonderfully robust the development has been for what is now known as Father Joe's Villages.
Sounds like a man of enormous energy.
Yes. And I think he'd be so happy for me to say this, but he also always surrounded himself with wonderful people. I mean, he's the leader. He had the vision and he had to get people on board with the vision. Mm-hmm. But he also always will always give credit. And that's very evident in the book to all the people who were around him that got on board and wanted to help. So it was like this beautiful ripple effect of he created like this solution, this idea that he had and how it could be different. And then people got on board with that. And then there's some people, Raina, who have been volunteering their time, donating the resources from day one of this project. It's absolutely incredible. So he'll always give credit to everybody around, the people who worked on the staff, the volunteers, the donors, and also the people who came through the villages and transformed their own lives as well.
I can't help thinking both magnetic and humble.
Yes, yes. Very determined too. I think that's one of the things is he's definitely a humble hero in many aspects, but he also, you talk to anybody who's ever worked with him, you know, he is adaptable to other people's ideas, but also his idea, he had to be driven in that knowing that this was the direction they needed to go. That was a little different. And then as they went in that direction, as they got on board, you know, started walking down that path, was very confident in what he was seeing that people needed. You know, Father Joe, his background is in education. And so the awareness that he needed to be educated more on how to help people was right out the gates. And then realizing education was empowerment. So that's why a lot of the programs that his team and he put together for the villages were very focused on helping transform lives through education and empowerment, all rooted in dignity and respect.
That's amazing. That brings me to my next question. He chose to be a priest. He's been a priest so far for 47 years, more than half his life. Why a priest? How did he become a priest in the first place? And how did he end up being called a Shabbos Goy, as you describe in the book?
Yes. One of the really fun, just sitting and talking with Father Joe, you know, in Father Joe, Life Stories of a Hustler Priest, how this book came about is that I just sat with him for a year and a half. He just talked and we shared and I listened. We started this process when he was 78 years old. He's 80 now. And so he was reflecting a lot on his life. So when you read the book, you know, he wants people to know who he is as the whole person. And so he grew up in the Bronx, big family, loving family. They grew up in a two-bedroom apartment, 8 people in this two-bedroom apartment, right? And everybody in the building was very neighborly, which brings about the whole village mentality. It was like being raised by a village. And here's the thing, you'll read this in the book, is everyone told Joey Carroll, that's what he's named, Joey Carroll, everyone was told Father Joe that he'd be a priest. And he was adamant to not be a priest because everyone told him that he would be. So, and of course, God had a plan for him. So he became a priest and was ordained in 1974. But as a Shabbos Goy, you know, the entrepreneurial spirit that we talked about, Rena, is when he was growing up, because their family, he always just had that mindset to make money, to earn, to provide. They needed extra money. So he started working when he was 8 years old. And he always came up with these entrepreneurial ideas. And one of which was in the Bronx, is a very eclectic community. And he grew up actually about a block-ish away from his Catholic church, but also there were about four different synagogues within the radius of where he lived. And so the Shabbos Goy, which is one of my favorite stories in the book, is where he came up with this kind of business plan that he helped out his Jewish neighbors on their Sabbath, which is from sundown Friday night to sundown Saturday, where part of their tradition is that they are unable to work during that time. So even turning on lights, running to the grocery store, any kind of task was work. So they needed somebody to do that. So a Shabbos Goy is a Gentile, like a non-Jew, who helps the Jewish community. So he did that every weekend. The thread of that, which is just so beautiful, because I love how, you know, divinely things connect, Reina, is when he started, when Father Joe's Villages, which was originally St. Vincent de Paul Center, started, one of the first groups that started volunteering, that's been volunteering all these years, that is mentioned in the book, is an organized group of volunteers that came out of Congregation Beth Israel. They've been volunteering for decades. And so, you know, Father Joe has always been, I would say, universally inclusive, like, you know, the common good. He once said to me, you know, Catherine, we all agreed that helping people in poverty, helping the homeless mattered. We all agreed on that. We came together and we've been doing it ever since. It's just a beautiful legacy for San Diego.
It really is. It's a beautiful story. And I could picture it as you're talking. See him in the Bronx.
Yes.
I know that he talks about the homeless shelters of the 1980s, that they were very institutional, meaning, quote, three hots and a cot. Unquote. Tell me why his concept of a one-stop shop was so radical compared to today.
Yes. Well, I think that's probably one of the driving points in Father Joe Life Stories of a Hustler Priest, the book that comes out, is his awareness that something different was needed. Mm-hmm. When he was tasked by the bishop to take over St. Vincent de Paul and to, quote unquote, build a shelter, he didn't know anything about housing people, sheltering people. So he decided to get educated. And so he did the wise thing, and he found out, he toured different shelters around the United States. He investigated. And it wasn't, we didn't have the internet then. You know,
could Google it.
There wasn't you couldn't do a report by Googling. Uh-huh. He had to ask questions, talking to people. So he was very diligent in his research of what's going on, what's the status. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was important for him that he discovered right away was that it wasn't just men who were homeless, that it was entire families, women and children. And at the time, women and children just weren't visible, right? Because in his mindset, he just saw kind of men who were homeless. Once he realized and discovered that women and children, entire families are homeless, he's like, okay, we need that. We need to help everybody. So that everybody mentality came in, and his, you know, dating back to the Bronx of how everybody lived together in a village mentality, he wanted to do it all under one roof, which nobody was doing, right? Men should be at one, women another, but they were families. So this concept of housing everybody together was revolutionary at the time. And also at the time, you referenced three hots and a cot. That was the traditional, quote unquote, homeless shelter model. And what Father Joe wanted was dignity in housing, right? He wanted it to be nice, you know, that it wasn't some abandoned warehouse that they transitioned over to, like, this, you know, come in for the night and leave in the day. He wanted it to feel like home, so that people could have a breather, because to transform lives, it's in the book too. So I don't want to tell you everything in the book, but what you'll hear that he shares is that none of us can change habit overnight, right? And so if we can really help people empower themselves out of poverty, out of the circumstances that they found themselves in, which is for a number of reasons, it's not ours to even know that we have to give them time and to feel the sense of relief,
right?
To have a compassionate relief. And that is how he saw the villages as being different. He didn't want it to be some abandoned warehouse. It was revolutionary to build a brand new building specifically for housing. This was completely not what was happening at the time. And so people around the United States, people were, and not internationally too, you'll read about an award they got internationally because of this building that the Joan Kroc Center that they built. Nobody was doing this. But he believed in it, Raina, so wholeheartedly that this is what should be. Brand new building, beautiful, like people feel at home, and that it provides dignity for the children. And I want to point this out. Father Joe has a real heart for youth because he was raised in a big family and he's always been involved in Boy Scouts and youth group and everything. But he wanted children to walk into their housing, whether they're going to be there for 24 hours or a few months or longer, that they feel not like, oh, we have to stay here. Right. But it was like, wow, we get to stay here. It raises the, you know, the energy of it. And it allows mom and dad to have children see their parents differently. And that was so important to him. And anybody who's worked at Father Joe's Villages, St. Vincent de Paul Center, all the way up to now Father Joe's Villages, that is a dignity baseline that they have maintained all these years. I think it's just so beautiful and speaks to his heart for everybody, all ages. You know, Father Joe is a cheerful scout. He's a happy guy and he wants children to know that they can be and be empowered to be whatever they want. They just need the space. And just like adults, they need the time to transform their own lives if they choose to. And that's what he wanted to, that's what they created effectively, yeah, was a program where people could come in and have the compassionate relief to transform their lives with their support.
He's changed everything. Okay, so we've talked about Father Joe's Villages, but he also created the Joshua House for AIDS patients and the Tucson Academy. Now, which of those is he most proud of and why, if there is one?
I would say those are both very important stories to read about in the book.
Okay.
It shows his heart for people, Raina. And Joshua House, that was actually something that Sister Faye Hagen brought to the attention of Father Joe that was needed in San Diego at the time. She was very involved in St. Vincent de Paul Center, Joan Kroc Center. And she had a friend who had AIDS. This was the 80s. And the church wasn't doing much about helping AIDS at the time. And nobody really knew what was needed at that time. And so she really brought that to his attention. And he brought that to the bishop's attention. And next thing you know, developed Joshua House. And I think that story is really important because it also shows just like the compassion and love that the team put together to help people have dignified respite. And most people who came to Joshua House, they didn't leave, you know, they didn't move on. The Catholic Church stepped up during that time. And I think sometimes we forget the press often shines a light on negative stories, but there's so many positive stories that come out of people who are committed to helping other people. And many of those are right here in San Diego, energized in the Catholic community and part of St. Vincent de Paul Center and Father Joe's Villages. Tucson, I'd love to talk about that. He is very proud of Tucson. So I think if I could summarize, speak for him, he's proud of the people. He's proud of people and how people have transformed their lives. But there were multiple occasions, Raina, when I was sitting with him in our interview sessions, and there would be an email that came through or somebody called through to tell him about another Tucson graduate who just got their medical degree, or another Tucson graduate who, you know, fill in the blank, had been empowered. And Tucson was a school. He found teenagers were often kind of that bridging space between children being cared for and by the
foster cares,
by the government. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and they age out.
So and so there was a real need for teenage respite and empowerment. And that's what Tucson was. And he's very proud of that. And even though that program was shut down after he retired, he's proud of everybody who came through Tucson. Beautiful stories of transformation of people's lives.
Wonderful. Yeah, it sounds like he noticed all the gaps, all the places that there were opportunities and the needs weren't being met exactly. And he rose to the occasion.
Yes. Like oftentimes the big question, a few times you read in the book that it'll say like, well, why aren't we doing that? Why isn't that happening? Why isn't that the way it's being done? And often the answer was, oh, we don't have funding for it. We don't have money for that. He's like, okay, so the only thing standing between a solution happening and where we are now is money. Great. Let's raise some more money.
Let's do it.
So he was solution oriented for the good of all people. Mm-hmm. And it was always, you know, hustling to raise money. And it wasn't for him. It was for everybody else. Right. You know, he's lived a very humble life. He lives in a very, very modest home across the street from, you know, the villages. He lives a very humble life. And everything that he has done has been for other people, you know, to help empower our neighbors. You know, he's adamant about the word neighbors, neighbors in need, you know, because everyone is our neighbor, just as we learn through the teachings of the Bible that he references.
And you mentioned dedication to the Boy Scouts. You want to mention a little bit more about his connection to the Boy Scouts?
Yes. Here's the thing, Raina. You talk to different people who know Father Joe, right? You bring up Father Joe's name and somebody's like, I know him. And they have this wonderful story about him, his impact on his life, and a tremendous impact he has had on the lives of people is through scouting, through Boy Scouting and Girl Scouting. He was a Boy Scout. So he, at his parish, when he was growing up, he got involved in the Boy Scouts. He attached to that wholeheartedly, you know, the character development, the earning badges. Boy Scouts have been a part of his life since he was very young. So you'll learn in the book that even when he came out to California for seminary, some of the gentlemen who were in seminary with him, he became a lone scoutmaster to help those teenagers get their Eagle Scout. So he became a scoutmaster in seminary. And so being involved in Boy Scouting is massive. And that's one of the main connections my family has to him and that I remember him a lot was because my dad and my brothers all went on jamboree trips with him and were involved with him in Boy Scouts.
I was going to ask you, yeah.
Yeah. How I know him is he was our parish priest to start out. When he got ordained in 74, he came to Our Lady of Grace with his first parish assignment in San Diego. And that's where my family, that was our family's parish. And so I was born in May of that year. He came in July. So that's why I've known him my whole life. It hasn't been a constant thread, you know, there's been a whole life. But as far as, you know, my mom started out as his Boy Scout secretary. And then when he took over St. Vincent de Paul, she became his secretary. And then my brothers and dad were involved in Boy Scouts. So that's a common thread that is part of the book. And even last summer, I remember, you know, anytime there was an Eagle Scout award, Raina, in San Diego, and he got an invitation, he would do everything he possibly could to show up to honor the accomplishments of youth doing extraordinary things. He finds great value in that. So Boy Scouts is important to him and is a common thread throughout his entire life.
It sounds like you were the perfect person to write the book.
Thank you for saying that. But I think, you know, everything lines up the way it's supposed to in intervention. And I was just actually telling him, Raina, I write a whole series of books and music for youth called Catherine the Grape. And the whole series is on the premise of this nickname that I got when I was 11 years old. And I got that nickname because I wore purple every day.
And you still do.
I do. I'm wearing it right now. And the purple outfit that I wore every day, that was my favorite outfit, Raina, was this tracksuit, sweatsuit. I think we called them sweatsuits at the time, that my mom bought on her lunch break at the St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. So this tracksuit that my illustrated character wears is a replica of that outfit. So a few years ago, when I ran into Father Joe at a fundraising event that I was at with my mom, I was telling him about this tracksuit and the series. And we were just talking. He asked me what I did and I told him. And next thing you know, he just sat there and nodded his head because I was telling him, you know, about my heart for helping empower people, helping empower youth and adults through the books and songs I write. And then he sat there and then he said, I have a book I want you to write, Catherine. And next thing you know, off we went. And so he asked me to write for him. And that's where it started. And, you know, truly to be able to simplify his story. And that's what you get with this book. There were a few other books that were in process in the past that never came to light. They never published. They never finished. And I can see why, to be frank, Raina, he has a big story. And like in Father Joe's life, this isn't the point by point, decision by decision year by year biography. That would be overwhelming. This is this beautiful overview look at a man's life with some of his, key stories that he likes to tell. But you learn about his childhood, you learn about seminary, you learn about some of these funny, shady things that he likes to do, how he made money and the, priesthood. And then obviously the development of what is now known as Father Joe's Villages. But all along, you learn about the mindset of this man, the heart of this man. And we all have stories of our lives that are similar in the sense of how the dots of our life connect. And that's what this book does. It kind of shows these dots to these decisions that he made in his life and that he was guided to by God to fulfill his purpose. And he's done it so beautifully and humbly and has helped so many people. And in writing for him, technically most people I would normally be, let's say, a ghostwriter, right? Because I wrote the book in his voice.
Right.
And normally when someone's in a public view, you would have a ghostwriter. Mm-hmm. And but the difference here is there's no ghost about it. You know that I wrote it. And, that's a soft testament to he wanted me to have credit for what I did. And that, I did it with honor and wrote it in his voice. And, we had to pick out which stories were the ones that, really wanted to share. And that might have been the biggest thing is to narrow down, to understand this man's whole life and then go, okay, let's narrow it down to these stories to share with people so that everyone gets an overview, of who he is. And I think it's a beautiful overview. It's inspirational. It's funny. And he approved every word. So I would write a section. I'd come in, read it to him. He's like, oh, I like that. Oh, that's great. And then he would be like, I said that. I was like, oh yeah. Word by word, section by section, or story by story, as you say. So I think the book is wonderful for people of all ages to read, college students who are thinking of the entrepreneurial path, or how do you take an idea and make it into material form? How do you help inspire people with your idea when you can't see it, right? He had to believe it to get other people mm-hmm. to see it years before it was even built.
Yeah.
And
you obviously love this whole project and every piece of it.
I did. On a personal level, my dad had passed. That's why I was at the fundraiser with my mom when I talked to him about the purple outfit. My dad had passed in 2015. And so I was doing a lot of different things with my mom. So I was her plus one at this fundraiser. And so for me on a personal level, when I started doing all of this with Father Joe, the premise, of course, was for me interviewing him, getting all the data I needed to be able to do this project. But we talked. You hit record and then there were just these conversations. So he filled for me over the past few years, this wonderful space of, he knows my dad. His mindset's very similar to what I'd say my dad, kind of like solution oriented, compassionate. And so he filled a beautiful space in my life that I'll always remember joyfully. But I encourage anybody to pick up the book, Father Joe, Life Stories of a Hustler Priest, because it's a quick read, it's an easy read, and I believe that you'll find some inspiration for your own life through reading about Father Joe's life.
These are really lovely stories. Thank you so much for sharing them with us. I do want to ask one more question.
Sure.
I know that Father Joe has recently celebrated as you mentioned, his 80th birthday. What does he hope to do next if he's able to move about the community? Does he have any other dreams or plans that he would like to try to accomplish? Or is he ready to retire and just kind of enjoy that?
Well, he technically retired in 2011.
Technically, yeah.
So he's not necessarily, as far as like from Father Joe's Villages, they have their own thing. But, he's very present. He loves being present and with scouting and efforts that are helping our homeless neighbors in need be empowered. So that's always ongoing. He's been lending his expertise to a few different organizations as well. His nephew is a partner in a company called Sleepy Bear, and Father Joe has been hustling to help his nephews, get this product out into the world. But Sleepy Bear, a lot of people are challenged with sleeping, and having a restful night is directly interconnected to all of our mental well-being and mental health. And so the Sleepy Bear product is a melatonin CBD non-addictive forming sleep aid. And so Father Joe has been helping him, just getting the word out about that. And so that entrepreneurial spirit I was saying,
Right.
It's in the Carol blood. It's in
everything Carol. He does. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and he'll say like, hey, you know, I can open the door. I can make the introduction, but Patrick and his partners have to be able to, you know, it's their product. They have to move it, but he believes in it. And, you know, my mom actually has used it because she has some trouble sleeping. And, you know, it's kind of funny because, when he believes in something and he talks about it, it's like, oh my gosh, I should have known about this. So yeah, he's been doing that. And I think he loves hearing about what's going on in people's lives. When he gets a letter from somebody who says, hey, you said my wedding back in 1982 and my husband and I are still married and blah, blah, blah. Those kind of stories, he constantly read me things, emails, cards, letters that he received from people who he may not necessarily remember the whole story. These people remembered his impact. And I think that's part of the legacy of Father Joe. And you read it about in the book is that we are all touching each other's lives. Mm-hmm. And he's touched lives. Those lives have touched other lives. And so that's how we help each other grow. And we help each other grow and be empowered by being loving and respectful and kind to each other, giving people that compassion and compassionate relief. So that's why I wrote the children's book version of Father Joe's Six Golden Seeds. So these, like, how do we help each other grow? We help plant seeds in each other. And so for people who have children in their lives and they want to introduce Father Joe to their children, grandchildren, students, youth group, whatever, we have Father Joe's Six Golden Seeds, which is the calf and the grape, the story that shares about Father Joe. So now we have a book that teens and adults can read as well as youth. So the hope, of course, is for his legacy to continue in all these different ways now and for down the line, and not for his own. He'll always say it's not for like his glory. It's for how can we help each other? We help each other through compassion, through dignity, through respect, through empowering each other.
Oh, well, that's a perfect way to end this interview. It was great talking with you. Thank you so much, Catherine, for joining us. It was really a pleasure having you and Father Joe on Bookshelf. Yes.
And thank you so much for having, I mean, this is just, you know, in this day and age, to be able to speak and share on podcasts. We thank you for doing this podcast and allowing Father Joe's story to be shared like this. So much gratitude to you, Raina, and your team.
For further information on Father Joe's memoir, please visit FatherJoeHustlerPriest.com. And for further information on author Catherine Cloward, please visit CatherineCloward.com. That's spelled KatherineCloward. And thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries, and some great books to read.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.